Welcome to Fat Camp Show number 24 for sometime around the middle of July 2017. Fatbike.com presents Fat Camp, a more or less monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/radio or subscribe to our feed on iTunes.
Welcome to Fat Camp, new listeners and old listeners. Here we are again.
Long time. No, I don't know if it's
no recording.
That would be what it is.
Holy crap. We're back.
Yep. After a little hiatus.
Yep. Well, it's a long story, but, we've been busy.
Yeah. It's been a busy spring.
We appreciate people kind of sticking around. Wondering where the heck we are, we're here. We're gonna do some recording. Summer's gonna be busy as well. We've got some things going on this summer that are gonna prevent us from kind of regular podcasts. I think we're gonna try to,
I think we're gonna still try to fit them in once a month.
But
let's kind of cross our fingers and hope that our schedules align.
Yes, and on behalf of Ken and I, I'd like to formally apologize to those people that listen to us. Wondering where the hell we were, work, family, health obligations. We just shit went on. Let's just put it that way.
Yep.
But the good news is we're here to talk about fat and plus bikes, and we're here to talk about technical stuff, and, we're here to learn something, folks, because God damn it. I don't know everything. I'll be the first to admit it. There's no one in the room except Ken and I, but Ken, I don't know everything, Ken.
And you know what? Neither do I, Andy. Mm. So let's learn together.
Yes, let's. Let's go down the reading rainbow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we've got some things bulleted, and we've got sub-bullets.
Yep.
No thanks to Ken.
Yep. It's got to be properly formatted.
Exactly. We got the proper format that we're going to talk about, and we're going to try to keep it as linear as possible, but I'm sure that it'll be an organic conversation, and we'll let it move wherever it needs to go. Okay. So let's talk right now about what's in the test hopper, because I'm busy right now.
Yep, you got all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I've got a RSD Sargent aluminum hardtail 27.5+ bike.
Rowdy.
Oh, it's got more suspension than... I don't have a good simile, but it would have to do with a penis, but I'm not going to talk about it right now. It's got 150 mils of travel up front on a pike.
Yeah. So it's got a burly fork.
Yeah. And so far I've taken it out a couple times, and my local trail is not the place to ride it. It needs to be going downhill way more than uphill.
Yeah. I mean, it's your really typical, rowdy hardtail at this point.
Yeah.
I don't remember if you said or not, but it is a plus bike. It's 27 plus. You got, what is it, 27 by 3 inch or 2.8?
Yeah. No, 27 by 2.8. Yep, that's it.
Okay. Yep. So
Schwalbe's,
I think it's the Furious Fred's.
No. Rocket Ron?
Rocket Ron, yes.
Yeah, Nobby Dick.
Thank you. Yes. Yep, you're totally right.
Mother Love Bone? Anyway.
But yeah, the slack head tube angle.
Real slack. Short, 66 something. Holy ridiculous.
Yeah, short stem, super wide handlebars, fairly low bottom bracket for the size bike. And, like you said, in a hell of a lot of travel with the fork.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Mary Poppins on the thing,
And all of that stuff is amazing in certain places in the country. But unfortunately, in the Midwest... or at least in our portion of the Midwest, where you got a lot of narrow trees and you don't have that steep of downhills.
Right.
It's not the perfect tool for the job.
There's a couple spots within driving distance, within 45 minutes that I can go, and I'm gonna really try to rip it down those long motocross downhills and see
super steep.
I'm gonna put it in its elements.
Rugged downhills. Yeah, lots of roots and drops and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it's the Pisgah of Michigan.
or at least Lower Peninsula of Michigan.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'll do it. It's diligence. It's due diligence.
Yeah, you're gonna do your due diligence.
I'm gonna do my due diligence to put it in its proper environ.
Yes.
And you know, come back with a good review about who should ride this, where should they ride it, what kind of rider it is. It only has one bottle holder cage, so that kind of pisses me off. But anyway, so that's going on.
I got to say, I was very, very, very impressed with this bike as far as the way it's built, the way it's spec'd out.
Oh, totally.
You know, they've done an amazing job with it. So, you know, while we talk about it maybe not being, you know, as Midwest friendly as some other bikes, I mean, they put a really good bike together. And I haven't really ridden it except for around Andy's neighborhood and played around over on some curbs and stuff. But just the spec on it, you know, the frame details, there's a lot of cool stuff going on with it.
Yeah, I'm going to put some hours on it for sure. So that's what's going on in my garage. Also in my garage, just arrived today, is the Specialized Rip Rock. It's a 24-inch by 2.8-inch Kids Plus bike.
Sweet.
Yeah, and kids and I put it together, put some stuff up on Instagram, some live stuff on Instagram. That was kind of fun. Took it over to the playground and got some pics. So that's up at fatbike.com. Read that product preview, and my kids are going to be trying to shred the gnar on that thing during the summer. I'm excited to see it because they had a fat bike that they played around with in the spring.
They had two fat bikes, right. Yeah. Now they got to share.
And they've also had their traditional 2.1-inch tire mountain bike, so it'll be cool to see what's going on with this Specialized Rip Rock. So make sure to stay tuned for that. That's coming down the pipe. But that's what's going on in my garage in terms of test product. Gomez loaded me up. All hail Gomez.
So I ended up getting an article relatively recently about trying to compare like the white versus the black compound V tires. Definitely give that a read. I found it to be kind of an interesting experiment because I had only ridden like certain tread designs in white and different tread designs in black. And my impression was that the white was a lot better in winter riding, but it wasn't until I went head to head that I'm like, whoa, the white is really sweet.
Yeah.
I like that snow avalanche tread design. It seems to end up being a really good all-rounder. It's very, very comparable to like a Dillinger or, you know, something like that, where it's just like it's one of those tires that you can put it on your bike and it's not going to be great in like super powder, but it's going to roll fast and it's going to be pretty acceptable across the board. Uh-huh. And it's just they come in two different sizes, 4-inch and like the, I don't know if they label it as 4.8 or a 5-inch, but you know, it's your typical 4.8-inch size tire. And a true 4.8-inch size tire. So you can kind of gauge it based upon your weight and what kind of, you know, flotation you need and stuff like that. But having the black and the white, that was really cool. The white compound rolls considerably faster. Snow doesn't seem to stick to it as much. Just a lot of really good stuff with the white compound.
I'm not the strongest reader, but in the article, was there a price difference between those two tires?
Yes and no. Okay. So, technically, like, if you look at their official retail list prices,
yeah,
you pay a premium for the white tires.
Oh, really?
But, you know, when you actually look at real-world prices, a lot of times the white tires are cheaper because they're just, I mean, I don't know how else to put it on, they're butt ugly.
It's the
color combination with those is just really hard to put it on a bike and have that bike look good.
Is there a bike that those tires would look good on?
I think there is. I mean, I think you could do certain combinations of colors, but you just, you know, you got to find the right bike for it. You know, like I've got a bike that it's my Quirin, you know, triple B. It's made for 2XLs and stuff like that. It's painted yellow.
It's yellow.
And I've got green anodized components on it.
John Deere.
Yeah. And you throw on a pair of white tires and I mean, it just looks like, you know, it's the yellow snow bike. You know, that's what it's become. Yeah. So it just doesn't look good.
Right. It's that kid in eighth grade that never could match and you used to make fun of him all the time.
Exactly. Right, that would be me. Right. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Thanks, Andy.
Oh, that was you. Okay. Cool.
No, so it's like that's the one thing I think everybody ends up looking at me like, damn, those fuckers are ugly.
All right. This is technical. Does aesthetics matter?
I don't necessarily think that's technical, but
I think you could argue that it is.
We
all want our bikes to look really fucking cool.
Oh yeah, no, I 100% agree.
And as soon as they don't, we're like, well, it doesn't matter because of the function over form. you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of cases where, you know, in the bike world, we choose function over form. But
if it's so hideous, like ridiculously hideous, but it works really well, would you go function over form?
Well, I mean, the way I closed the article was that thinking about buying a pair of white 2XLs.
Okay.
You know, it's like I'm going to go out of my own pocket. I'm going to buy these things because,
gotcha.
I mean, it makes that big a difference. You know, and it's like, you know, and part of that is because the 2XL is such a slow rolling tire that, you know, in black, that's the only way I've ridden. I haven't ridden into white. But, you know, I would love that thing to be more versatile because having that flotation and that amount of traction and all these other kind of things, they're great. It's got many, many good characteristics, but it just rolls like snot. Okay. So having a white one which rolls better, I mean, I think I would ride it considerably more. I pretty much only will pull out the 2XLs because they are so slow. I mean, I'll only pull it out when I know I'm going on a group ride and I got to be breaking trail and everybody's going to be riding behind me, or, you know, I'm going out solo and I'm going to be doing some crazy powder ride or, you know, something like that.
If you're far enough ahead of us, we won't even see how fugly it is.
No, well, the thing is, though, is that you guys will be able to keep up no problem if I'm riding the 2XLs. You know, it's like if I'm breaking trail and, you know, you guys are going to be sitting behind me and thinking this is great. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm definitely of the opinion that in this case, you know, function definitely is beyond form. Gotcha. You know, it's enough to sell me.
Pouring beer. Hang on. Pouring beer.
Yep.
So anyway, if you haven't read that article, which you're ridiculous if you haven't yet, hop over to fatbike.com and read Ken's article about the black versus white compound. It's a good article. And if you need help with the big words, shoot us an email at fatcamppodcasters@gmail.com. Yeah, plural. Sorry.
We got tradition here, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a while. I forgot about all these traditions. And we can help you with the big words. Durometer, hysteresis.
Yep. Hysteresis.
If you've been with us for a while, you're aware of these words that don't really mean anything in regular language.
But, they mean so much.
I know. Of course I do. So that's what's been going on in Ken's world. That's what's been going on in my world. Probably what you're going to hear about a lot over the next couple months, if not for the rest of the time that we podcast, is that Ken's got some things going on this summer. just a couple small things.
Well, I've had a couple of cool opportunities.
Cool opportunities. Yeah.
So, I just booked my flight and, like a week from now, I'm going to be flying out to Salt Lake City and then driving to the Wind River Range and going to be hiking the high route in the Wind Rivers.
No bike, though.
No bike on that one. Okay. No. Nope. Right. Yeah, unfortunately, there's some sections that's all wilderness. So,
okay.
And there's no way you'd want to ride.
Right.
That's pretty gnarly stuff. So,
so slow and low, that is the tempo.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Yeah, so you know, it's gonna be a little bit of a break.
Yeah,
and then I'll be back for a few weeks, and then I'm headed out to Colorado, and I'm gonna ride the Colorado Trail
in record time.
Techno, I'm going out there. I'm giving myself, you know, like 10 to 12 days to do it. Which,
awesome.
You know, I mean, I'm still gonna have to ride a decent amount. I'm still gonna have to average over 45 miles a day. But
okay. How tough is that?
Want to really comment.
Okay, all right.
I don't think it's going to be crazy tough.
Okay.
And I'm trying to keep it from being crazy tough because essentially what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out there. I've got a little more than 2 weeks time out in Colorado. Okay. So I'm going to do the Colorado Trail and then I'm going to spend a couple of days kind of resting up and then I'm going to do the Leadville 100. So, yeah, I'm just really looking forward to getting out into the Colorado high country and just chilling out and, you know, riding my bike and not having a whole lot else to do for a while.
It is legal out there, right?
Whatever you're speaking of, I think it is.
Okay, so then, well, wait a minute, though. You're withholding some more story here. After CO trail, then what?
That, like I said, I'm going to do the Leadville 100.
Okay, and plus tandem or fat tandem?
It's going to be a plus tandem.
Okay.
Yep. So, because just riding the Leadville 100, you know, that'd be too easy.
Right.
You know, I got to figure out ways to up the game here.
Yeah.
No, more like, I probably wouldn't. I'm not that motivated to race.
Okay.
So I wouldn't necessarily do it just for myself. But husband and wife that I'm friends with.
Right.
I've actually ridden the tandem and raced the tandem with both of them. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, the husband.
Oh, yeah. Shkwamigan.
Yeah, exactly. James. I ended up doing Shkwamigan with him.
Right.
And I've raced with his wife, Lori, several times. Uh-huh. But James wanted to go out and race Leadville on a single speed.
Really intelligent move there.
And they had a pretty bad experience riding the tandem at Leadville last year.
Did they finish, though?
Oh, yeah, they finished. They got their belt buckle.
They did. Okay.
Just barely under 12 hours. But okay.
They didn't stop and take a shit then, did they? Anyway.
But James was like, basically for the whole like last, I don't know if it was 50 or 60 miles, he couldn't eat anything. He was just like puking the whole time.
Oh.
Couldn't eat and barely could drink.
Okay.
So, you know, they had a pretty rough time out there. So they wanted to head out there and do it again. And they were like, hey, you know, would you want to end up doing tandem? And I'm like, sure. Cool. Why not? And it's kind of cool because we got a few other people going out there. Scott Quiring and Christina, they're going to go out and they're going to race it too.
Yep.
We got another friend who's going to go out there and do it.
Our friend Ryan's going to head out there.
Yeah. So
he's doing all gears though, completely.
Oh, yeah. He's not stupid.
Right.
So, you know, we got a crew going out. So
cool.
That's going to be a good time.
Nice. Now, what's your opinion upon coming from 600 feet going up to 10,000 to start?
Ouch.
Do you go out and acclimatize, or do you just go and show up and race?
Okay, so pretty much, I think the general consensus on this is that if you're going to go from sea level up to above 10,000 feet and race, what you want to do is have the shortest amount of possible time between the time you get out there and the time you actually race.
All right.
Because what happens is your body kind of, it reacts, and 2 or 3 days in, your performance will actually drop.
Okay.
Because your body is like going, holy crap, what have I gotten into?
Right.
So you basically want to get out there as fast as you can, you know, and like race right away.
Okay.
So then you're like Scott and Christina and Ryan, they're planning on, and same with James and Lori, they're going to plan on going out there and like racing within a couple days of being out there.
Okay.
Whereas the other way you can end up doing it is if you've got 2 weeks, then you can acclimatize and you're going to end up doing, you know, a lot better.
Is 2 weeks of rule of thumb for most people?
Yeah, that pretty much is. Yeah.
Okay.
Like after a week, you start to kind of, you know, not suffer a lot.
Okay.
And then after 2 weeks, your body is really starting to respond. And after 3 weeks, you're doing pretty good.
So Colorado Trail will be challenging on multiple aspects.
Oh, yeah.
One will be going from 600 feet to 10,000
feet. Yeah, but, you know, I'm going to be going from Denver to Durango. And when you go that direction, you start out in Denver at, you know, 5,500.
Right.
And I don't cross 9,000 feet, until near the end of the second day.
Okay.
So it's going to give me a chance to kind of work into it.
Right.
I'm hoping that this trip, you know, out to the Wind River Range is going to help, because pretty much that whole trail is going to be above 10,000.
Gotcha.
So I'm, you know, even though there's going to be 3 weeks in between, and I think that's a little bit of a stretch to get any kind of acclimatization bump, I'm hoping that helps a little bit too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And you just want to finish. That's the goal.
Yeah, I want to have a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, part of my mentality going into this, and we kind of talked about, you know, this on our notes of our, you know, the mindset
down the
change
road,
or whatever. Yeah. But
we can get into it. It's fine.
Yeah. So, you know, racing on a tandem, you always roll the dice. It's very easy for mechanically something to go wrong or just whatever. You know, you got two people, so you got twice the chance that somebody's going to not have their nutrition dialed or the hydration dialed or, you know, whatever.
They got to poop.
Yeah, something. Okay. Yeah. You know, there's just a lot that can go wrong when you're racing a tandem, period.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that can go wrong in a 100-mile race, tandem or no tandem.
Mm-hmm.
So you combine those two factors, and then you end up combining in there, you know, the altitude thing, which is an environment that, you know, James and Lori have a lot of experience. They've gone out several times to end up doing races out there. But nonetheless, you know, every time you go out there, it can be, you know, a different experience. Your body can react a little bit differently. So, you know, you roll all of it in there, and it's like, I don't want to put all my eggs in the Leadville basket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't care that much about race results. And then, you know, it's just, it seems like a really, really, really good opportunity to be disappointed because stuff out of my control went wrong.
Yeah.
So what is in my control is to have a badass time for 2 weeks and do the Colorado Trail.
Sure.
And, you know, if I get out there and I'm like, this is wearing me out too much for Leadville, or, you know, the altitude's kicking my butt more so.
Back down the
or,
hill you go.
Yeah, whatever. Then, okay, so then I just hang out in the Colorado high country. And
literally, yes.
Yeah, and then ride on back,
right,
and
right.
I'm good to go. I don't have to finish it.
Right.
You know, I really want to finish it. You know, it's a big goal to finish the Colorado Trail. However, I'm not tied to it.
Gotcha. No, that's a good frame of mind going into that trip, you know. So you'll be out there 2.5 weeks?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Right around that.
Cool. Cool. And that's kind of been a recent, I guess just to share some, I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting what's been going on. Last year we had, I don't know, half a dozen at least racer boys.
Yeah.
Going into 100 milers, local 100 milers,
yep.
Hitting local regional races, that kind of stuff. And this year it's a completely different frame of mind because no one's really into that thing right now, and we're kind of having a little bit more fun this year.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's a lot of different things. It seems like the race mentality has kind of waned a little more in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, among a lot of us. But then, I mean, you know, I feel like this is almost a topic for a whole nother podcast, but it's like, you know, there's been several different people locally that have started running into heart issues, and not like from unhealthy living, but, you know, a lot of times, you know, either genetic or it's attributed to basically being a hardcore endurance athlete for years and years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if anybody's followed, you know, some of the things that have gone on with like Leonard Zinn, who writes for Velo News, and
right.
some people like that, you know, there's a book that was recently published called The Haywire Heart.
Haywire Heart.
You know, it kind of ties into that. And it's like your incidence of, you know, having different heart issues. A lot of times it's, you know, some sort of, you know, atrial defibrillation or, you know, something like that, you know, where you get a regular heartbeat or, you know, you end up having a racing heartbeat or whatever.
Quit talking about me, Ken.
You know, a lot of that, your chances of having that happen are considerably higher for, you know, really hardcore athletes, you know,
right.
people that are like training really hard and doing, you know, these extreme events like 100 milers.
No. And now that, like I said, it's an organic conversation. Now that we bring that up, that'd be a good a topic of Fat Camp down the road, because not only myself, but another guy that we ride with have run into that problem recently, which is part of the reason that everything's kind of chilled out, at least for me.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, that throws a big wrench in things, you know.
And I wonder if people that listen to us maybe will be like, "Holy shit, I went down that road too," you know.
Yeah.
What we're finding out is it's not uncommon. And so what happens is that two of us get it, and then all of a sudden people are like, "Whoa, shit! I don't want that to happen to me. I want to slow down too and enjoy the ride."
Well, and you know, the thing is, it's very easily as it, like an athlete to like keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and
yeah.
you know, and be really driven. And you know, most of the people that are going to be acting like that in their athletic life are also acting like that in their, you know, professional life and, you know, their personal life. So it's really easy for, you know, you to get to be really intense in a lot of different areas and have a lot of stress in your life. And, you know, I know for myself, I've always dealt with stress through cycling and things like that. And, you know, it's been a very effective way to deal with stress, but it, you know, this is a case where there's a lot of research that's starting to come out about, okay, there are long-term ramifications about that. Okay. You might've been able to get through the moment and deal with the stress appropriately and, you know, feel like it was a healthy thing.
Right.
But, you know, you still really stress the crap out of your body and your heart specifically.
Sure.
And that, you know, that isn't a healthy thing to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, as I talk about going up and riding 45 miles a day.
Sure.
For, you know, 10 days and going up to the Wind River Range and doing this crazy high route thing, which is supposed to be
right.
like super
and
duper hard.
And then doing Leadville.
Yeah, and then doing Leadville and all this other kind of stuff. Feet. You know, the hypocrite me probably needs to chill out. But at the same time, I feel like I feel like I'm shifting personally. I'm shifting more to the bike packing mindset, where it's more about getting out and having an experience, having a good time, you know, taking things in. And it's not about, okay, I got to crush, you know, my competitors
right.
or whatever.
I haven't set any Strava PRs this year on purpose. I want to get back to bike packing, but I also want to talk about what kind of tires you're going to run out there at Leadville
that,
on the tandem.
Oh, on the tandem? I'm going to end up using the Maxxis Chronicles.
Okay, and those are... Oh, excuse me. Those are...
It's a 29 by 3. So
true 3?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess, you know, let's just talk equipment setup because we are a technical podcast.
Yes, let us.
Okay, this...
Take me through the tandem.
This is the same Quirin fat bike tandem that I raced at Shequamigan with James Gomez. In that case, I raced 4-inch tires front and rear. You know, my normal setup is to run like a 2XL on the front and then run a Lou on the rear, you know, in the winter and stuff. But what I did is I built up a second wheel set for this. So it's, it's a 29-plus wheel set.
Well, what width on the rims?
I'm trying to remember.
I asked the right question.
No, exactly. Yeah, I've been building too many wheels for people and stuff, and it all kind of like blends together. I mean, if I remember correctly, I ended up going with the WTB, the scrapers.
Okay.
And I think I ended up going with the 45 millimeter width, if I remember
aluminum,
correctly.
Right.
Yeah, I went with aluminum.
Yeah, because you got sketched out on the carbon.
Yeah, well, okay, so, you know, with a tandem, you typically have to run fairly high tire pressures.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you have to worry about impact damage to rims. You know, it's like you can pinch flat them or bottom out the tire very easily.
Okay.
So, you know, you've got to run higher pressures. And a lot of the carbon rims are very specific about saying you can't run higher pressures, otherwise you can crack them.
Okay.
So, you know, aluminum rims, I mean, you can get a decently wide rim. You know, it's a good price. I know the thing's going to be, like, super strong and super stiff because, you know, I've got in the rear of that thing, I've got a, you know, a 190 hub. So, you know, I know I can build a bomber wheel. And if I happen to bottom the tire out and dent the crap out of the rim, oh, well.
What hub do you have on the back of that thing? Is it a 99?
No, I ended up, using a Hope Hub.
Okay. And it's laced to a 45 mil internal WTB scraper.
Yep.
And then you got a Chronicle 29x3 on there.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of the Chronicles. They seem to roll really well. They've got really good aggressive side knobs and, you know, Maxxis has got a really good reputation for casing durability.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, it kind of is the perfect combination.
Can you recall the casing, the compound on that? Is it one of their new ones or?
It's the EXO casing on it. Yeah. I don't remember too many other details about it. They
double down and silk screen.
It's none of that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just, it's their basic EXO casing.
Okay.
And, yeah. I want to say it's a triple compound tread. And you know, I'd ridden them a while ago and they're a little on the heavy side for a single compared to some of the other tires. And, you know, like with a lot of plus tires, you can get by with less knobs, especially in, you know, this type of area. So, you know, if you look at the Chupacabra or something like that, you know, it's not got a lot of knob on it.
Right.
But it's got so much surface area that kind of makes up for it.
Okay.
So the Chronicle's got more knob than that, especially side knob. And it, when you get into softer trail conditions, those knobs churn up the, you know, the sand and the dirt and stuff like that and cause more rolling resistance.
Yeah.
So, it wasn't an ideal tire, in my opinion, for a single, for a lot of stuff, but it is really damn nice on a tandem. And I think, you know, if you're riding a little more aggressively or if you're riding more on rocks and some stuff like that, it's a really good tire on a single then.
I bet in 2 months you'll be able to tell us a lot more about your tire choice than you, you know, as you reflect upon it rather than futurize on it.
Yeah.
Futurize? What the fuck?
Okay. Making up words again.
Right, okay. Well, good. What kind of fork are you running on that tandem?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I'm running a MRP. I think it's called the Stoke. It's actually, I don't remember what the names of their forks are. I think it's the Stages is their kind of like in between. It's a 34 mil stanchion fork. 34, 35, you know, so it's kind of like your all round trail fork.
Okay.
But what they do is they basically take that fork, which is a pretty rigid fork, and then they put different internals in it and they limit the travel. So it's a 100 mil fork.
Okay.
It's fairly stiff. It's got, you know, plenty of clearance for a 3-inch tire on it.
Okay.
So nice combo.
At Leadville, you're not taking big hits though, are you? I mean, it's pretty much
I mean, there's some downhills where you're going to end up
might
being
be
a chundery. Pretty rocky. Yeah, exactly. Okay. I mean, maybe not quite chunder, but I mean, you're going to have a lot of baby heads and stuff like
okay.
that. So, you know, you're I definitely want a fork.
No, lockout on it?
Yes, but it's not like on my my Fox 34, which like completely locks out.
Right, right.
It's kind of a soft lockout.
Like a pike lockout.
But at the same time, it's kind of perfect. Like, we've been doing a lot of test riding around on it, and I can climb out of the saddle, and the fork doesn't really bob.
Okay.
So it's got a pretty low threshold for blow off. It's the best thing I've ridden in a while for a tandem.
So for this fat tandem converted to plus tandem, will you use some frame bags on there for the race?
Probably not. I think I'm almost going to have to run a Camelback because on a tandem.
How many bottles can you get on your tandem?
I think six or
can you get six?
Seven. I might even be able to get eight. It's got a lot of bosses.
Okay. All right.
But the problem is taking your hands off the bars to
right,
drink
right, right.
some of the times is just, it's not feasible in a race scenario right. on a tandem. So I'm pretty much guaranteed I'm going to be riding with a Camelback.
Okay.
And then, you know, it's just going to be more convenient to go that way. And then we can swap out bladders, you know, at the aid stations. I'll end up having basically one for each aid station.
Any idea what, without riders and without pedals, what the weight of that complete bike is going to be?
I'm not 100% sure.
I have a scale that could weigh it. I just bought one.
You dork. I think it's going to end up being low 40s.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty light setup. I'm going to end up going with Eagle on it.
Okay. No shit.
Yeah.
Are you going to XX1 or are you going to go with the GX?
I'm actually probably, so I have a quiver of bikes. Okay. Yeah, it's like, I mean.
Really?
Yeah. I've got a bunch of bikes. And what I want, you know, it's like, and I swap drivetrains around between them.
Yeah, it's
so
hilarious.
Yeah, and this is kind of getting away from your question, but so.
I won't forget what my question is, so go ahead.
Yeah, what I want to do is get one, like, good, lightweight Eagle group so that's kind of like my travel group.
So you want the XX?
I'm probably going to go with XO. Yeah.
Damn.
So, and I'm going to drop some coin on that.
Holy
but,
shit.
But, yeah. So I'm going to have that.
Okay.
And when the other thing is, you know, I made that decision to go that route, and I've already acquired some of the stuff for
this
it.
This is recent news. I haven't heard of this, folks.
Okay. Yeah.
This is like hot off the press.
And then after I had gotten that, then they released the GX version of Eagle.
Yeah.
And
my
I'm like,
eyes lit up. I was like, hell yeah, that's me.
Yeah. And well, what I was thinking is, okay, bike packing, the Colorado Trail, like, coming from, 600 vertical
right,
feet
right,
up
right.
to, 10,000.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
30 by 50.
I'll take a 50.
That's my gear right there.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm going to end up doing is I'm going to probably, if assuming that it's available and stuff, right now it's looking like, I think it was 716 QBP is going to start getting
GX.
Yeah.
Eagle? Okay.
So what I'm planning on doing is buying then a GX Eagle group.
Okay.
Then I'm going to put on my full suspension bike, which is what I'm going to ride for the Colorado
Trail. Dude, that cassette is so much weight. I'm just razzing him because he's been razzing me about my XT 11 speed and how much it weighs, and then the GX weighs the same amount for the 12
yeah,
speed.
Yeah, but you only have 1146. I want to have 1050.
Yeah, but the way I ride, I don't need 12. I just need 11. I might even go back to 8 speed.
No, so yeah, so I'm pretty excited about Eagle because
that's cool,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's basically me.
I didn't know this. I mean, you're just revealing it right now. Holy shit. That's a whole nother, there's a podcast right there.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to getting on Eagle. I'm
cool.
excited about that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't need it around here, you know. I mean, heck, I ended up
yes you do. Yes you do. You better ride the crap out of that around here.
I rode 10 speed forever around here just
Zach,
because
you rode 5 speed, 7 speed, you
yeah,
know?
I know, but I mean it's like, you know, 1x10 was plenty. You know, it's like having that 36 tooth was more than enough.
Right,
you know,
1136. Right, right. Yeah.
And, you know, it still would be plenty for me. The
that's
problem
what
is,
that's what the Specialized Plus bike for the kids have. Is it 11? It's a 10 speed, but it goes up to 36.
Yeah.
I was like, damn.
Yep.
Anyway.
But, you know, it's like, I always would play around with chain rings and stuff.
Right.
So then when I ended up going with the 11 speed and I got 1042, okay, I don't have to end up swapping out chain rings. I can basically ride the same thing on our normal mountain bike trails or go to some crazy moto trail and I'm good.
Right.
You know, I might end up swapping out and putting in a littler chain ring if I'm going to go down to Pisgah or something, you know.
Right. Which we're going to do.
Oh, yeah. Definitely planning on doing that again next spring.
Exactly.
But with the Eagle, I mean, now all of a sudden,
yeah,
it's like it really, really, you know, extends some stuff. And it's like for those for trips where I'm like doing just crazy stuff with crazy steep climbs or altitude or whatever.
Front chain ring.
Yeah.
Just change it out as necessary.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, I need to do that. I can probably end up running like my usual 34, 36 and be totally
there's
fine.
Probably a bunch of guys in Pisgah and Colorado. No. There's probably a couple guys in Pisgah or Colorado that listen to this podcast and they're like, you're stupid for going one by.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure there's people out there, but I mean,
changing front chain rings is so easy though. Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's like I'm running the camo system on my full suspension bike now. So,
okay.
Yeah. And I don't, have we even talked about my full suspension bike on here?
I've been putting centerfolds on the Instagram.
Yeah. Body. Yeah.
People have been like, ooh, la, la, la.
Yeah. So I've got acquiring full suspension bike that can run 29 plus. And it's pretty rad.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of the gist of this.
Right.
So, you know, it gives me the opportunity to run around on the moto trails with full suspension on a plus bike.
So what are you going to take? What are you going to ride on the Colorado trail then?
I'm going to ride the full suspension bike.
Full suspension 29 plus?
Yeah, and I'm having
oh dude, you can't ride 29 plus on a full suspension bike.
But no, I'm probably,
that's ridiculous.
I'm probably not going to run 29 plus. I'm probably running 2.6s. So I'm looking at running the Knobby X.
Wait a minute, then is 2.6 a plus or not?
Well, I think we've had that conversation before.
Jeez, you know, everyone's coming out with 2.6.
The reason why I'm not going plus is because there isn't a lot of sand and there's some pretty extensive. There's wilderness sections along the actual Colorado Trail.
Yeah.
So there's bike reroutes. And, one of them, like it's fairly early in the ride. It's like 60, 70 miles long.
Yeah.
So, and you're not riding on paved roads, but okay. I don't want to end up having a plus bike. You know, it's like, I want to have something that's going to roll a little better.
Right. I was just going to say that in Pisgah, you really enjoyed the 29 plus.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
But I guess you weren't packing though.
No,
that's
a whole different thing. I mean, that's super rugged terrain. And it's and I was, you know, I tried out running 2.6s front and rear, the Schwalbe Knobby Nick. And then the other setup I ran was a 2.6 Knobby Nick on the rear and a Minion 3.0 on the front. And that Minion was so rad.
Really?
I love that thing. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a place where, you know, a plus tire like that can be really cool.
Well, we fell in love with Maxxis, you know, a couple months ago, unbeknownst to us. But holy shit. You saw the fire jumping. I mean, you know what we're talking about, folks. If you follow us on, Fat Camp Podcasters.
Plural.
At the Instagram. Join the fun. I've been trying to actively put up shit on the Instagram, which is I've gone live a couple times. I mean, this live stuff is scary. What you can do, it's crazy,
especially when you're showing the 15 pack of beer that we're gonna
that
go
worked
hide in the
out perfect, man. We made
single speed great again.
We did, and we did it with 29 plus, and we did it with 29 skinny, and we even had an outlaw show up with gears, and he swore not to shift, and he did anyways. Yeah, exactly. Can we get back to 2.6 tires, though?
Yeah. All about it.
Is it plus? Is it baby plus? Is it like toddler fat?
I think luckily we're finally at a point where we can kind of start to break down some of these like terminology
or
barriers.
Is there even a point? I mean, to label it as such.
That's what I was gonna say. The labels don't really make a difference. I think 26 is pretty darn cool.
Text from Gomez. Go ahead. 2.6 is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I rode the Knobby Nicks, and, you know.
Are they true 2.6?
No, they're a little bit undersized. I had them on.
What size rim?
Yeah,
what kind of pressure?
I think it was like a 35 millimeter internal width rim. It might have been 38 millimeter internal.
Okay.
So, you know, not a super wide rim, but, you know, a decently wide rim. And they measured out at 2.55. So, you know, if I had it on a 50 millimeter rim, I would get the 2.6.
Right.
But,
yeah.
The good part about it is it is the happy medium, because a lot of times when you end up being on a full on plus bike. You've got great float, but sometimes the bounce can be bad. Like okay. if you're launching off a jump and you land it wrong,
my middle name.
you can start to fold the tire. You can get some weird characteristics. Right. You know, there's a lot of situations like that when you're riding really aggressively and you know you're getting off the ground where a plus tire, it can kind of get a little unruly.
So that might be where a smaller plus.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason why they've talked about like the 2.8 inch tires being like the ideal plus size. Now they're talking 2.6.
Well,
I think 2.6 is a happy medium.
Is everybody in on the 2.6?
Pretty much. I mean, if you look at it, you know, Michelin's out there. You know, we've got the Travail. They've got, and I'm so stoked about this. They've got, you know, a 27.5 by 2.8, but then they also are doing a 29.2.6.
27.5, 2.8?
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
That's what you got on your bike, dude.
Yeah, that's what's in my world right now. Yeah, and so Michelin, Terravail.
They're doing the 29 by 2.6.
Right.
They've got two tires in that realm, so okay. they're kind of like doubling down on that. You know, Schwalbe's got the Knobby Nick. Maxxis is running a couple different tires.
Okay.
You know, it's like there's
the dominoes are just going down.
Yeah, because you know what's happened is that you know. They're kind of starting to realize, okay, a 2.6 fits on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it fits on a lot of bikes. It fits in a lot of forks. Oh, yeah. So.
Well, this was the airport conversation that we had before.
Yeah.
Was like 2.2 inch increments are appropriate and fucking cool.
It is.
So,
yeah.
Oops, sorry. They're really cool. Sorry, Chad. Jeez, oh, Pete.
No, you're 100% right, though. I mean, it's like, I mean, we should end up seeing, you know, a 2.2, a 2.4, a 2.6, a 2.8, and a 3.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like...
2.2 increments in my world is, like, huge to my wife.
But, no, it's that will allow you to kind of, like, tweak, okay, how soft a surface am I riding
right.
on? You know, how aggressive am I riding? You know...
Well, on chain rings, you go 30, 32, 34, 36. I mean, two teeth, how big of a difference can it make?
Yeah, exactly. And we need that full spectrum you know, for tires or chain rings, either way.
God, make cycling great again.
That's
right. Make mountain biking just amazing globally, you know?
Jeez, no, okay. It's like I don't want to end up having a million SKUs from, you know, the bike manufacturers. But at the same time, I really do think – you know, there's certain treads that just, you know, should end up being kind of across the board. But, I mean, at the same time I say that, you know, there is a time and a place for a more traditional mountain bike tire, something that's in the, you know, the 2.2 to 2.4 range.
Right.
Because we've had just a crap ton of rain lately.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've done a several rides, and our trails drain very well, but at the same time, it will still pool, and you'll still end up getting some, like, muddy, like just greasy spots and stuff
right.
like that.
We got to go back to the swamp and fill in those holes, by the way.
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
But it amazes me how much better in some of those situations a skinnier tire rides than a fatter tire. Because the fat tire tends to just plane on, you know, nice smooth mud.
Right. Yeah. A nice layer of grease.
Yeah.
Not grease. Grease.
Whereas, you know, like a skinnier tire, what it's going to do is it's going to basically dig down deeper into the mud. It's going to find traction someplace underneath.
Welcome to Tire Talk with Ken Blakey Shell. It's kind of like coffee talk with Paul Baldwin back in the day. So, do you have a 2.6 inch tire in your quiver?
Yeah, I've got the Knobby Nicks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and those on the full suspension quiring.
Well, they're not on there right now.
Okay.
I've been playing around. I've been bouncing back and forth between a 2.35 Racing Ralph front and rear, and then going with a variety of different plus tires.
Gotcha.
Where I'm riding.
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah, just kind of trying to see where, you know, the, no pun intended, pluses and minuses are.
Yeah. He's a witty one, isn't he? Jeez. But I wanted to get back to, that was a nice kind of foray into the organic world of our conversations about the 2.6 inch party that we're having from Eagle, where that went
to. Yeah.
Bike packing.
You got your first little taste.
There's several very extremely inappropriate things I like to say about bike packing, but let me just put it this way. that's what I want to do.
It's, I mean,
that's
awesome.
How I want to ride.
I mean,
how long did it take? How many miles did it take before I was like, into it?
It was less than 5 miles. And then, like, you were like, oh my God.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, there's something about the mindset. There's something about the way the bike rides.
Oh, it's
there's
like
just
this,
everything.
This big heavy bike going down these swoopy trails is.
Yeah, it's like dirt surfing, big time.
And then anytime you get to a hill, you just click, 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 and just wind yourself up.
Well, and you welcome going slow and listening to the birds and looking around.
Yeah.
And
the birds are crazy.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like there's so much goodness with it.
Buffed out single track, old forest two track, gravel roads, snowmobile trail, aggressive steep north country trail. I mean, we hit it all.
Yeah.
And then we moved a tree. You son of a bitch.
Yeah, and that's where Andy's troubles began.
Oh, slip disc, pinched nerve. Fortunately, though, the riding, what we did is we did North Country Trail. We did a section of North Country Trail, which goes from North Dakota to New York.
Well, yeah, we did one small section.
We did one
between
small
North
section
Dakota that, and South right.
which runs New through York, Manistee but. County. Yeah. And it was perfect. We got everything, man. It was great. And we moved a tree, and I slipped the disc, and I was like, oh, I'm out. Ken was like, no, you need medication. This is what you need. You need this type of medication. You need this type of medication.
You got alcohol.
I was like, I don't know. So I ended up making it all the way up to the campsite, which
was an absolute idyllic place.
It was heaven. It was amazing.
It was.
I wish I could have stayed. I swung the leg off my bike and I couldn't walk. So.
Yeah, you made a good call, probably. One.
I called the wife, and she drove about 40 minutes to pick me up, and that was it. But bikepacking, though, oh my gosh, if you haven't done it.
Yeah. Well,
it's a little bit of investment.
A little bit, but if you hunt around, you can find do-it-yourself stuff where you can build a lot of the gear yourself.
Oh, yeah, DIY bikepacking stuff.
If you want to go cheap, there's plenty of ways you can go cheap.
Strap a dry bag front and back, you know.
Yeah.
Backpack the damn thing, you know.
Yep, exactly. There's a million ways to do it. You know, I think, you know, a lot of bike manufacturers and stuff like that are trying to kind of sell a lifestyle and style products, and, you know, and there's kind of a very traditional bike packing kind of rig setup, but there's a lot of variation in it. And if you're just going to plan on doing like even in an overnighter or whatever, you don't have to spend jack shit for money.
Right.
And you can have a good setup.
Well, and the overnighter was just like, holy freaking shit, you know?
Well,
that was enough.
Yeah. What's so nice about the bike packing is
I just texted Gomez, and I meant to text my wife.
oh that crap. Could be really inappropriate.
Anyway, I just wanted to do a shakedown. I bought gear, you know. I spent probably I don't think I spent $200 for my bags, stove.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, I had backpacking stuff from back in the day, and maybe $200, and definitely have to be fat or plus. I see pictures of people doing it on skinny tires.
I think it depends on your trails.
That'd just be shady, though. I mean,
well,
that's a lot of weight.
I agree, but it's like you got to bump up your pressures a little bit more.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's a lot of situations where if you're not in softer conditions, then it would be just fine. It's just around here, you know, that amount of weight, all of a sudden you start feeling like the bike's knifing around a lot.
Right.
So that's where, you know, like for our little slice of heaven in the Midwest, I mean, I have to admit, you know, a plus bike is kind of a gimme when it comes to the bike packing thing.
It's just,
it really helps out. Unless you're doing like a lot of, you know, Forest Service two tracks or some really,
well,
you know,
I understand why fat bikes and bike packing go together.
Yeah. And plus bikes and, you know,
bike packing. Yeah.
No, I 100%
totally.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a really good match. And, you know, I kind of feel like a broken record, but I can't emphasize enough, you know, kind of the and I don't want to sound cliche or just do it kind of mentality to this. It's like, you know, if you haven't gone out and gone bike packing, or even if you have, just get out there, do an overnighter, do something little, because, you know, there's something just so amazing about having all your crap on your bike and having nothing to do all day but ride your bike and then
and look at
chill
that.
Out. Yeah, chill out in the woods at night. Yep. And then ride your bike some more the next day.
Right.
I mean, it's just.
Well, and I always thought it was just like an epic, you know, Tour Divide thing. But then, you know, you were like, hey, we can do like a 10-mile bike packing.
Yeah.
Route. We can ride our bikes 10 miles south, set up a tent, and go walk around for the next 8 hours, you know?
Yeah.
But it definitely was an eye opener.
Yeah.
That's stupid to say, but that's what it was.
No, but it's just, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, there's so many ways it gets marketed. Because, you know, you've got people doing all this extreme stuff, and it's really cool stuff, you know, but you don't have to. You just, I mean, the bliss is just getting out there and doing it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it was, I love it. I'm doing it again. We're going to plan another trip. If anybody wants to go, get a hold of us through our Gmail account. That's Fat Camp Podcasters.
Plural.
@gmail.com. We're going to probably do a late August trip, I think. That'll be the most opportune time. I'm heading out to Montana with the family. Ken's got Colorado shit going on. Late August, get a hold of us. Come along with us. Ah. We're going to roll the dice. Hopefully you're cool. We're gonna do a bike packing trip. I think we're going to take Kevin with us.
Yeah, hopefully we can go in the fall too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think there's, I mean.
Leave after work on a Friday.
Yeah. And then that's exactly it.
That's
it's
what
like,
you need.
You can't imagine how stoked you're going to be all week.
Yeah.
Thinking about doing this.
And then how far that's going to ride you out. That's going to ride you out another 2 weeks.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It's like, it's just a whole lot of awesome injected in your life.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
So.
Not a lot of tech talk on this. I guess this is the, hey, where the hell have you been? You know, Fat Camp. But one tech thing I do want to talk about, and we're going to do this after the break because we've been talking for 45 minutes.
Yeah, we've been talking a long time.
I want to talk about width of tires.
Okay.
And what's appropriate when.
So I thought we already talked about that kind of.
No, we didn't. We didn't do the whole thing.
Okay.
I want to break it down from 2-point all the way up to 5-point.
Okay.
Yeah. So be right back.
Hey-ho.
Welcome back to Fat Camp Podcast. Don't forget to check us out on the Instagram at Fat Camp Podcasters, plural, at the Instagram. And also email us at Fat Camp Podcasters, that's plural, @gmail.com. Anyway, one last thing we want to talk about, because we did 53 minutes without anything, is here's the question that's come up. It even came up 2 nights ago when we were doing a single speed festival, is when is it appropriate? When is a 5-inch tire appropriate over a 4.8-inch tire appropriate versus a 4.6-inch tire over a 4-inch tire over a 3-inch tire, even a 2.1-inch tire?
And my response when you brought this up is, oh my God, this is a huge topic.
That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, because I mean, there's so many nuances to it. Because I mean, if I had to list off all the scenarios where, I don't know, a 4.6-inch tire was ideal, I mean, I would go on and on and on and on.
No, and over the course of, you know, 20 plus discussions that we've recorded and had over the last couple of years, width of tire is something that comes up all the time. I mean, it's just, I don't know if any buddy who rides a plus and fat bike gets sick of that discussion. I don't.
No. Well, because we're all trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's I guess the crux of what makes this so difficult to figure out is that, and I kind of have to talk about the road world because I feel like it's the most obvious example.
Okay.
Is that for years and years and years and years and years, people have talked about, and this does apply to, you know, the mountain bike world too. But you know, the skinnier tire feels faster,
right?
Because it feels sketchier.
Yeah.
And
yep.
To suss out, okay, so, you know, this might be very mellow and not feel like I'm pushing the bike very hard, but you are going faster,
right,
on a fatter tire.
Right.
You know, that your mind can play tricks on you in that respect. It's very, 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 very easy.
Gotcha.
You know, it's
and
like,
that makes sense.
So there's a lot of times where, you know, you run into a softer condition and you would run a fatter tire than you would think should be appropriate, and it ends up being really fast. You know, and an example of this is, you know, a moto trail we've got locally called the Little O.
Right.
And it's highly variable because if it's wet, you can run a plus bike and it's great. But if it's dry, you know, then your traditional 4-inch tire is great. If it's super dry, all of a sudden,
right,
you know, a 4.8-inch tire becomes cosmic.
Sure.
And that is 100%, you know, how soft the surface is.
Okay. So the short to the long is the hardness of the surface.
Yeah. And don't go off of your perceptions of speed. You collect data.
Okay.
You know, I don't think there's any better way to put it.
Well, and if you don't give a shit about speed, run what you brung.
Yeah, run what you like to run, because they are going to have distinctly different feels.
Right.
You know, a wider tire is going to end up being more chill in a lot of respects. If you're just kind of like moseying down the trail, it's going to be way more mellow feeling, relaxed, however you want to describe it. You know, if you want to end up feeling like you're riding on the knife's edge, you know, like either because you're pushing the envelope so hard, or, you know, that's just kind of the feel you want to get out of your bike, go narrower.
Gotcha.
You know, go on the more narrow end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the flip side of that is
flip it.
Kind of like we talked about before, mud.
Ah, who rides in mud?
Oh, there's a lot of people that ride in mud.
I know. It's like, I rode in mud last weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And mud is so common. And it's like, and that flips this entire paradigm on its head, because a lot of times, you know, the more you cut into the mud, the more absolute traction you have. And having a big, fat, wide tire.
It's like a ski. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a big, fat, wide tire is like, it's almost like a suction thing, because you got to, like, you know, you got to break the tire free from, you know, this wet surface.
And then it carries it with it.
Or either it carries it with it or it doesn't. You know, it's like there's that kind of period where it's like, you know, it's kind of thinking about wanting to end up sticking to the tire.
Right.
So you got to like kind of almost like peel that stuff off your tire instead of it sticking to your tire.
Right.
You know, it's that whole thing that's going on where a wider tire feels a lot slower.
Gotcha.
Okay. It's, you know, you have less traction and control and, you know, steerage, and you have, you know, more rolling resistance.
Okay. Well, this discussion will continue as it always does about what width is appropriate when, but it was something that came up and I was like, let's talk about it. Ken's like, that's just a can of worms.
But I mean, I think if I remember the conversation you're talking about, what happened was a friend of ours who recently got into, riding, I'd kind of describe it as a gravel bike.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't, he's riding a kind of an old school cross bike that's got, you know, fairly low slung geometry, so it'd be good for touring too.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned him on to Compass tires.
Kevin.
Yep. And this is not, I don't think, anything we've talked about before, but Compass is this, I'm going to describe them as curmudgeonly, but that's totally the wrong way of putting it, because they really suss out things from a technical standpoint, but they don't assume that new is better.
Okay.
So they do a lot of
curmudgeonly is appropriate then.
Yeah. Kind of very, very, very counterintuitive to what the bike industry is kind of pushing.
Right.
Bikes, you know, they've been advocates of big fat tires for ages and all these types of things. Different types of brakes, you know, they're not big fans of disc brakes, and,
ooh,
you know, and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's like, you know, some of us are like, that's heresy. I mean, how can somebody not like disc brakes? Disc brakes
right, are right, awesome. Right.
But you know, they present a pretty good argument for it, but sorry, I'm getting away from my point. Tires. So they make these tires that are like a super, super, super supple casing. So it conforms to any kind of irregularity in the trail really well.
Oh, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And they have just a really basic, you know, kind of like herringbone on the tire. And you look at these things and you're like, oh my God, this is gonna be so sketchy riding it on, you know, like, I mean, I'll ride this stuff on, you know, single track, you know, really like sandy, you know, two tracks and things like that.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to put a picture of it up on the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah. But it ends up riding super, 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 super do well.
Why does that tread pattern work so well?
It's not necessarily the tread pattern. It's just, you know, you're dealing with a really big tire.
Yeah.
You know, bigger casing. It's very supple. It's like, it's all the things that we love about tubeless tires and mountain bikes. And, you know, it kind of started to bring that into the road world. But so what happened is he's riding these tires that he's found. It's like, they're incredibly versatile. They work on regular pavement really well. They work on, you know, these kind of gravel roads and sandy roads and two tracks and all sorts of, you know, and single track.
Yeah. He did a century last weekend.
Yeah. So he dropped
6,000 feet of climbing in a century. He averages 17 miles an hour.
It's all road. It's not any of these soft surface. Yeah, and it's like, and people were like making fun of him the whole time.
How wide,
like,
are they? Are they 38s?
They're 36s as far as what they're labeled on the tire, but they measure out at a 38.
Okay.
And people were making fun of him.
Why you got the fat tires, guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, because I'm going to crush you right now. Watch this. See ya.
Exactly. And it's like, there's aerodynamic, you know, like negatives that come to it. But when you're riding 17 miles an hour, there's not a lot of aerodynamic negative.
Yeah, but over 100 miles for 6,000 feet, that's pretty good.
That's really good. Yeah. So, you know, that was kind of the genesis. And then I think, you know, it kind of expanded from there. I mean, you know, like you mentioned sort of in your introduction about this long-winded section, you know, piece on,
right.
you know, what's the appropriate tire size.
Appropriate length.
You know, we had a variety of tires out there. Right. You know, you were riding your old school cue ball that had a very traditional setup. Like, I mean,
2.25s, man.
Yeah, semi-slick on the rear.
Yeah, Kenda's small block 8 on the rear, man.
Yeah. You know, so you ended up having that. You know, I ended up having, you know, I had my Contra mullet. It was the party in the front, business in the back.
Right.
So a 3-inch Chupacabra on the front and a 2.35 Racing Rolf in the rear.
Ryan was 3-point front and rear. Kevin was 3-point front and rear, single speed.
Yep.
Everyone was single speed with various tire sizes.
Yeah, it was like all over the board, and we were all pretty equally matched.
Yeah, it was good. I had to be more careful.
Yeah, you definitely did.
I knew that I could take corners a lot faster than I was, but I was like, oh, I made that one. Okay. Actually, I just put Kevin in front of me to slow me down.
There you go.
He'll never listen this far into the podcast, so it doesn't
matter. No, he won't. He'd never hear that.
Cool. Well, great. Holy cow. Hey, folks, we're back. The camp is alive. The camp is kicking. The camp is burning. We're going to try to, do another one in another month. Just remember that
first trip down, check.
Right. Exactly. We got stuff going on, but, we have these conversations, and whenever we have these conversations, we try to record them. So,
unfortunately we don't a lot of times. A lot of times we're like,
this is a podcast now.
Yeah. Right. Now, yeah. This is a topic we should talk about.
Jeez. Can you record it on an iPhone and then transfer it over to this?
I'm sure we can.
Ooh, that'd be crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right, cutting in mid-ride, we have to talk
right,
about.
Exactly. Here we are right now with Ken Blakeyshell. He's on top of this hill, and he's got a tire review for you coming at you live. Dude, that'd be great. So anyways, hey, thanks. We truly appreciate people listening to us, supporting us. Making comments on Instagram, getting a hold of Gomez, saying, hey, Gomez, when are those guys going to talk about their tech stuff again? I really miss it. I need another podcast. but that's kind of that's one of the reasons why we do it. The other reason is because we just like to listen to ourselves and talk about bike shit.
Yeah, I think it's just an excuse to talk about bike stuff.
Exactly. So hopefully you know how to get a hold of us. I would like to do eventually, and this might be – I'm going to advertise this for a couple times. I would like to do a completely – email question podcast where all we do for the podcast is just listeners send in their emails to us. We talk about them. We respond to them through email, but then we also respond to them on the podcast. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's try to shoot for that in the fall. Maybe send us an email. We'll just start organizing our emails and, we'll try to do that, and that way we'll make you famous too.
There you go. Exactly.
Exactly. Hey, thanks for listening. Take care.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening. The music we are using on today's show is from the Free Music Archive. It is the song Easy Riding, performed by Animals and Men. You can find all our shows at fat-bike.com, including notes for today's show.